Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 314 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in today's short podcast, I'll be continuing the rapid review series for the USMLE Step 2 CK exam. If I'm not mistaken, in today's episode, we're actually going to be going after rapid review series number 57. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's series number 57. And again, as a reminder, offering the combined Step 2 CK Step 3 class next week. Again, it's a super high yield class. Again, I've had many people take the class that have done extremely well on their USMLE exams. It takes place next week from Wednesday to Saturday. So it's 5 hours each day. It's 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which is the same thing as 2 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On all 4 days from Wednesday next week to Saturday. And then on Tuesday, I'm holding an MBME test taking strategies class, again, from 2 to 4:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which will be 5 to 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, lots of people have taken these courses and they've done extremely, extremely well on the exams. Again, I've had people that were doing poorly on practice tests. They take the course, the two courses, and they take a practice test like a day or so afterwards, and they've bumped up by like 30 points, right? So again, if that's something you're interested in, shoot me an email and I'll be more than happy to give you some more information on cost. The course is over Zoom. Again, it's a very comprehensive course, very high level course. We cover everything from peds to surgery to IM to OB-GYN to psych to neuro to biostats to ethics to the November 2020 changes. So you'll see how it's applied in the context of questions, because many times, right, it's not enough to just like know information, right? It's also important to kind of know how to use that information. And also we cover the step one material that has slowly started making its way into step two CK. So again, / step three. So if you're interested, again, just shoot me an email and I'll give you some more information. Okay, so let's jump right into it. So what if they give you a question about a 25-year-old male? You know, he comes in with flank pain, fevers, you check his urine, you see a lot of white blood cell casts, right? And then they tell you that, oh, he's given ceftriaxone, right? IV ceftriaxone, right? Because he has pyelonephritis. I feel like many times the more recent MBM exams, you're reading a question and be like, oh, I know exactly what this is. And they'll tell you exactly what it is. And then you're like, uh-oh, what's this question that's coming next? So, right, so this person gets like IV ceftriaxone for pyelonephritis, and they tell you that, you know, they do a gram stain of the urine sample and they see like gram negative rods, right? So they tell you that they give IV ceftriaxone, and then they say that 2 hours after the person gets IV ceftriaxone, the person starts having like rigors, starts having fevers, starts having chills, right? And the person's blood pressure is like 75 over 40, right? If you see that, what do you want to think about? I hope you're saying, huh, Divine, this is potentially the Jarisch-Hexheimer reaction, right? The Jarisch-Hexheimer reaction. Again, I know some of you may be like, Divine, this does not look like syphilis, right? So that's the point behind this question, right? So your friends at the MBME, they're getting really smart. So these are things about the Jarisch-Hexheimer reaction. Again, the MBMEs, they're still testing the same old pathologies. They're just testing those things in different ways, right? So remember, Jarisch-Hexheimer reaction in general on MBME exams, you can see it in spirochetes, right? So like if a person is getting antibiotics for any spirochete infection, like Lyme disease, like syphilis, remember Lyme disease is caused by Borrelia burgdorferi, which is a spirochete, or syphilis, right? Treponema pallida, which is a spirochete, or leptospirosis, which is caused by Leptospira interrogans, which is also a spirochete, right? Those things, if you're treating those infections with antibiotics, right, as those bugs are being lysed, their cell soap kind of spills into the surroundings, and those things can cause major, major issues for an individual, right? Kind of like the same thing with gram-negatives as well. Gram-negatives can actually also incite the Jarisch-Hexheimer reaction. In fact, many resources may lead you to believe that it's spirochetal infections that are the most common cause of the Jarisch-Hexheimer reaction. It's actually gram-negatives, right? So this person that has pyelonephritis, well, what can you tell me about the most common cause of pyelonephritis? It's going to be E. coli, right? E. coli is a gram-negative organism, right? So Jarisch-Hexheimer reaction again can, basically the key thing is you'll see a person that just recently started antibiotics for some kind of either gram-negative or spirochetal infection. And then you notice that within a few hours, minutes to hours after they get the antibiotic, everything just gets really bad. I'll say more hours because if you see it within minutes, you're thinking more along the lines of some kind of anaphylactic reaction, right? Or like, allergic reaction of some sort, right? Which is not the point of this question, right? So this is a Jarrett-Schexheimer reaction, right? And again, essentially the pathophase is like, especially with these gram negatives, right? When their cell walls are lysed, they release a lipopolysaccharide. Probably remember studying that from step one. And then that LPS, right? And other molecules incite like a big cytokine reaction, right? And for the most part, you don't need to stop the antibiotic therapy. All you really need to do is just give NSAIDs, supportive care, maybe give them some fluids, and they'll be fine. Steroids will actually be the wrong answer on your MBM exam. If you select steroids for the treatment of the Jarrett-Schexheimer reaction, I can pretty much guarantee you're gonna get the question wrong. Okay, so what if you get a question about like a 24-year-old male? Excuse me, 24-year-old male. His parents bring him to the emergency room. You know, they tell you that, oh, he collapsed at home. And then they tell you that, you know, over the last 3 days, their son has kind of been out of it. And they tell you that, oh, he ran out of his prescription 6 days ago, right? And they say, his parents say, you know, he plans to get a refill soon. And then they tell you that, oh, in the question that this child has like severe persistent asthma, takes daily oral prednisone. Right? And let's say he also takes like albuterol and ipratropium. Remember, albuterol is a beta-2 agonist. Ipratropium is a muscarinic antagonist, right? So, and then they tell you that he also takes like oral formoterol. Remember, albuterol is a short-acting beta-2 agonist. Formoterol and salmeterol are long-acting beta-2 agonists, right? They are LABAs. And then they tell you that physical exam shows like decreased responsiveness, patient is somnolent, and then you notice the patient's blood pressure is like 60 over 40. And then they tell you that, oh, they give a letter of crystalloid, right? Again, crystalloid is just MBME fancy terminology for normal saline, right? For normal saline. So they give crystalloid, although lactated Ringer's technically is an example of a crystalloid solution. But again, hopefully when I have time in the future, I'll make a podcast on fluids, right? Because I think that thing kind of messes people up a lot on exams and also just clinically. Although, again, this podcast is for exams, right? Not for clinical management. Okay. So they tell you that they give him a liter of crystalloid and his blood pressure only increases to like 61 over 30, 41. So basically, systolic blood pressure went up by one. Is that systolic blood pressure went up by one? So if you see stuff like that, what are you thinking about? Well, I would really hope you're saying, oh, Divine, sounds like this kid has potentially like a HPA axis crisis, right? Almost like an Addisonian crisis in a sense, right? So this child pretty much stops taking steroids abruptly, right? But remember, if you've been taking steroids for a long period of time, right, your hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis will essentially atrophy from chronic suppression, right? Remember, steroids, they work at the genetic level, right? Steroid hormones just in general work at the genetic level. So the person's HPA axis has actually been suppressed, has actually gone into atrophy, right? So this person essentially was taking his medications and then ran out, right? So when you run out of your medications, well, you are no longer taking that exogenous steroid. If you're not taking that exogenous steroid, well, there's no place for steroid to come from in this individual, right? So essentially, this person is going to have an adrenal crisis, right? So they will have hyponatremia because they have an aldosterone deficiency. Remember, aldosterone's job is to help you reabsorb sodium in the principal cell of the collecting duct, and P potassium as well. And it also helps you P protons, right? So if you remember these three tasks, you'll be in great shape. Aldosterone helps you reabsorb sodium, P potassium, and P protons, right? So reabsorb sodium, P potassium, P protons. So if you're not able to reabsorb sodium, you're going to have hyponatremia. If you remember that INEC channel, that's kind of like the channel that aldosterone upregulates in the principal cell of the collecting ducts to help you collect sodiums from your urine, right? So you get hyponatremia, you get hyperkalemia, right? And you get a normal anion gap metabolic acidosis, right? In fact, if you want to be more specific, again, because it's a low aldosterone state, you're going to be getting a a type 4 RTA. Remember, a type 4 RTA is the hyperkalemic RTA, right? It's the kind of RTA you get when you have a low aldosterone state. Say, for example, if you have like 21 hydroxylase deficiency, or you have Waterhouse-Friderichsen syndrome from meningococcal infection, or you have Addison's disease, right? Or you have just, again, anything that causes a primary adrenal insufficiency. And then, you know, if a person has been on steroids for a long enough period of time, right, and you're like, okay, we need to take you off steroids, what are you going to do? Are you going to stop it abruptly? No, you're not going to do that, right? If not, you'll throw the patient into the exact same situation that is bringing this patient of ours into the ED, right? Essentially, you need to taper it over weeks, especially when they've taken it for like a long period of time, like this guy, right? You need to taper over weeks, right? So one thing that is becoming more important on step 2 CK, step 3, again, especially with step 1 becoming pass-fail, is they're beginning to import stuff from step 1 to step 2 CK, step 3, right? So what is one big thing that they love to test these days, right? Again, pharmacology. That's like easy pickings for them, right? So let's talk about how prednisone works, right? Let's kind of talk about some high-yield things that your friends at the NBME will want you to know about steroids so you don't get them wrong on your test, right? So remember, prednisone, for example, it actually is like a prodrug, right? So it goes, when you take it orally, it goes to the liver. The liver, right? It's a very big time metabolic organ. It's going to convert that prednisone to prednisolone, right? It uses this enzyme called 11-beta-HSD, 11-beta-hydroxysteroid dehydrogenase, right? You probably don't need to know that, right? And then, so that prednisone is converted to prednisolone. And then that prednisolone will then act on intracellular glucocorticoid receptors, right? It will affect gene transcription and all those things, right? Now, do you want to give steroids to a person that has a history of diabetes? Probably not, right? Because remember, steroids, they can worsen hyperglycemia, right? Remember, steroids, they are diabetogenic hormones, right? So they can potentially worsen a person's hyperglycemia, right? In fact, what are the other diabetogenic hormones you want to know for your exam? Well, besides steroids, remember, you want to also know that if a person has a glucagonoma, right? Glucagon is a counter-regulatory hormone, right? So it can cause, it can worsen a person's diabetes, right? So that's why typically people that have glucagonomas, they have that necrolytic migratory erythema, right? And then they have diabetes. Remember that growth hormone is also a diabetogenic hormone, right? So people that are taking exogenous growth hormone, right? They are at very, very high risk of getting diabetes, right? And then another diabetogenic hormone, especially like in OB-GYN country on NBME exams, is human placental lactogen, right? So human placental lactogen is released by the placenta. It causes a mild insulin resistance in mom, right? So that mom's blood glucose levels are higher than normal, right? Which is almost like an adaptive measure so that there's more glucose and energy available to the fetus, right? So that's something to keep in mind for exams, right? And then remember, what is the gastric side effect associated with corticosteroids? But I hope you're saying, oh, Divine, potentially steroids can cause a peptic ulcer disease. In fact, this is a classic NBME exam question. They'll give you a question about a person that is being started on chronic steroid therapy for some bad rheumatologic thing, right? Or really bad asthma, right? Those people need to be placed on two prophylactic things. One, they need to be placed on prophylactic PPIs, right? They need to be placed on prophylactic proton pump inhibitors, especially if you're taking steroids for like 3 months or more. But another thing those people need to be placed on is prophylactic bisphosphonates, right? Because remember, bisphosphonates, they can absolutely cause a decrease in a person's bone mineral density, right? In fact, they can give you a question about a person that has been on like oral steroids for some disorder for a long period of time. And then they tell you that the person starts having like low back pain or like right hip pain or something like that. If you see that, especially if you see like in the hip, I want you to think about avascular necrosis, right? I want you to think about avascular necrosis of the hip, right? I definitely want you to think about avascular necrosis of the hip. Now, what if they give you a question about like a 39-year-old male, again, still talking about steroids. So 39-year-old male, he's been on prolonged like steroid therapy for the last like 3-6 months, right? And then they tell you that, oh, he has been noted to have this decrease in executive function, right? They tell you that he has forgotten to turn off the stove multiple times at home. And then they tell you that, oh, you know, maybe he's in some like PhD program and he's struggling academically, right? If you see that, I really want you to think of something called steroid dementia syndrome. Right? I want you to think about steroid dementia syndrome. It's one of these things you pretty much won't find in any resource, but it's something that's floridly high yield to know for your USMLE exams, right? So steroid dementia syndrome. Essentially, the thing that happens is, if you're trying to kind of like say, oh, Divine, why would this happen? Well, essentially, it happens because you have downregulation of glucocorticoid receptors in the hippocampus and also in this part of the brain called the prefrontal cortex, right? Because think about it, right? If I just kind of think of it this way, right? So say, for example, you love bread, right? Let's say you're like, oh man, I really love bread, right? And then you eat bread morning, afternoon, evening, breakfast, lunch, dinner for like 3 weeks, right? After a while, you kind of get tired of that bread. And when they give you bread, even if it's like the choicest bread, let's say like something like super, super, super sweet bread, right? You probably turn it down after a while, right? Because again, you've been overexposed to that bread. So you're like, you know what? I'm tired of this. Get this out of my face, right? So the thing is, if a person is taking chronic steroid therapy, and this disorder usually happens in people that have taken steroids for a long period of time, right? The thing that's unfortunately going to happen is you're going to begin to downregulate those glucocorticoid receptors in key parts of the central nervous system, like the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex, right? And if you downregulate those receptors, unfortunately, that person can begin to have some dementiva symptoms, right? And again, whenever a disorder has a neuroanatomical association on exams, it's absolutely necessary to know those things for NBMEs, right? So again, you want to make sure that you understand that these people, right, it's associated with downregulation of glucocorticoid receptors in the prefrontal cortex and in the hippocampus, right? And the thing is, this is actually not permanent, right? So the thing is, if the person stops taking those corticosteroids within a few months to a year, their memory will come right back, right? Okay, what if a person has been on corticosteroid therapy, right? And they tell you that, oh, this person has been having like proximal shoulder and hip pain for the last 2 weeks, and they tell you that the creatine phosphokinase is within normal limits. Well, if you see that, I would hope you're saying, oh, Divine, this is potentially like a steroid-induced myopathy, right? Remember, whenever you have an endocrine cause of a myopathy, that's classically associated with a normal creatine phosphokinase level, right? So when people have like steroid-induced myopathy or people have like hypothyroid-associated myopathy, those tend to be associated with normal levels of creatine phosphokinase, right? Or what if they tell you a person has been on steroids for a long period of time and then they're beginning to have like worsening vision at night while they're driving? Right? If you're seeing that, I'd really hope you're saying, oh, Divine, this person potentially has cataracts, right? This person potentially has cataracts, right? Or let's say they give you a question about a person, because remember, steroids are associated with lens opacification, right? Okay, what if they give you a question about like a 39-year-old male? They tell you that he's on prolonged steroid therapy and, you know, he requires like pelvic surgery because he's been in like a major motor vehicle accident. And then they tell you that during the procedure, he's like super hypotensive. And they're giving him all these fluids, but his blood pressure doesn't seem to be responding. If you see that, I really want you to say, oh, Divine, this person potentially needs a stress dose of steroids, right? Again, this person has like an adrenal crisis, right? So this person is undergoing a stressful event of some sort. So he'll need more than his regular dose of steroids, right, to help. And again, you may be like, oh, Divine, can't his HPA axis help? Well, it cannot. Why? Because again, if you're taking chronic exogenous steroid, that's going to suppress, cause atrophy, right? Atrophy of your HPA axis, right? If you atrophy your HPA axis, you cannot meet extra demand, right? Because again, surgery is very stressful on the body, right? So again, that's why this person requires a stress dose of steroids. Many times on NBM exams, you don't give any steroid. For some reason, the NBM really loves hydrocortisone. Hydrocortisone is a corticosteroid that also has some pretty amazing mineralocorticoid activity. Now, what if I'm just going to keep talking about all the steroid things that come to mind, and then that'll be the end of this podcast, right? Because again, steroids are one of those things, you know, as you're taking your exam, you're going to see a bunch of questions that kind of goes over those things, right? So what if they give you a question about a patient, they tell you that this patient, again, has been using inhaled fluticasone for allergic rhinitis, right? And then they tell you that, oh, this person has been using it for months, and then now this patient presents with like odynophagia. If you see this, I really hope you're saying, oh, Divine, this sounds a lot like esophageal candidiasis, right? Because again, steroids, they are very good, right? Especially if you're not using it right? They can percolate into your esophagus, right? They can immunosuppress the local environment around your esophagus, and the person can get candidiasis, right? Can get candidiasis. And typically, if a person has esophageal candidiasis, what are you going to do for them on exams? I hope you're saying, oh, Divine, we're going to go ahead and do the Nystatin swish and swallow, right? You do the Nystatin swish and swallow, right? Or you can even give those people like an oral azole on an NBME. Okay, now what if they give you a question about a patient, you know, let's say this patient has a history of multiple sclerosis and this patient right now is having like sudden onset painful vision loss, right? So they bring the person to the neurology ICU, and they tell you that, oh, they start this patient on like 100 milligrams of IV prednisone every day to kind of help with that optic neuritis, right? And then let's say like 2 days after this person starts therapy, they tell you that this person starts pulling out IV lines, you have to restrain this patient. The patient is saying that there are voices that are coming out of her stomach saying, oh, these doctors want to kill me, kind of deal, right? If you see this, I would hope you're saying that this person has steroid induced psychosis, right? They'll try to trick you and they'll put brief psychotic disorder and whatever crap as an answer. Remember, whenever there is a potential substance that's causing a person's like psych problems, then you cannot diagnose that psych problem, right? You need to say psych problem due to XYZ substance, right? That's like a classic thing that pops up a lot on MBM exams, especially like psych shelf exams. Now, what if you see like Sigi cap symptoms, right? So like the poor sleep, low energy, concentration guilt, psychomotor retardation, the works, right? In like some 42-year-old guy, and they tell you that he was placed on oral prednisone therapy for like severe persistent asthma, right? Like 9 days ago. Again, this person has, they'll put major depressive, let me not say 9 days ago, 23 days ago, right? Again, they'll put major depressive disorder as an answer. Don't pick that, you get that wrong, right? Again, the thing you want to pick is this person has like a substance-induced mood disorder, right? So again, whenever there's a substance you're taking, like a beta blocker or a steroid, right? Or interferon, right? That's potentially causing a person's depressive symptoms. You cannot diagnose those people with major depressive disorder, right? You need to pick the answer that talks about like a substance-induced mood disorder in those circumstances. So I guess let me go ahead and stop here. Again, as I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for many exams, step one, step two CK, step three, preclinical med school exams, third year shelf exams. If you're a medicine resident, I tutor for the medicine entry exam and the medicine boards. So if you're interested in that, just shoot me an email and I'll give you some more information. And then I also work with people on ERAS applications. Again, I've worked with tons of people that I've matched in many different disciplines, derm, psych, pathology, ENT, ortho, neurosurgery, cardiac, cardiothoracic surgery, right? So I've worked with tons of people that I've matched in pretty much every specialty, right? Again, people that have tricky applications, red flags, graduated from med school many years ago, kind of deal, right? So again, if you're interested, just shoot me an email through the website and I'll give you some more information. So thank you for listening to me today. I'll see you in the next episode. Have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful day. And God bless you. And please pray for the Lakers that we win against the Golden State Warriors today. Okay, thank you. Bye.